the Antiwhite system and tune in to the Pro-White system at RadioArian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 6th of March, 2018. We're having a really exciting week so far. We had an invasion of Sargon's speech by the Antifa yesterday. We had Richard Spencer's speech getting attacked again by the Antifa. We've got Alison Chablow's trial on Wednesday. And today we've got Nat Dainlaw on the Daily Nationalist. Nat, how are you doing?
I'm doing fairly well. I just had to quickly pop in some pork chips into the oven just before we started this podcast program. But yeah, I did see a Sargon of Akkad triumphantly smash the skulls of his leftist enemies. I did see that. It was quite a triumphant thing to see Sargon of Akkad holding up the banner of the Reds of his slain foes.
It was good to see. It just goes to prove what we've been saying for so long. It doesn't matter how much you counter signal, how much you say you are not a racist, the Antifa are still going to treat you as one, and they're still going to attack you. So you might as well just double down and be as hardcore as you could possibly be. You need to be a fanatic, which I believe is slightly to do with the subject of what you wanted to talk about today, Nat.
Yes. And it's all in the relation of what you could call the cycles of the rightist movement. Something that I have noticed just through a quick, skim through of the right wing history. It seems to be like a pattern in most nations. Wherever you look, wherever the racialist movement is struggling for its cause, that any movement starts out with the premise. Any sort of premise, let's just call it pro-white premise, right? It has a steady growth. They get a lot of media attention. At some point, they get so much media attention that they think, wow, we're finally ready to take this into the area of big league politics. Let's take this to the level of parliamentarian politics in the parliament. We're ready for getting elected. So what normally happens at this point, since they think that now they're ready to put on a suit and tie, they think, oh, no, all these fanatics, the very roots of our movement, those people who went out with their signs and banners and set up posters and set up propaganda all around the towns, that fiery youth, the fiery element of the movement, yeah, they're kind of problematic because of their way, their attire. They don't talk as delicately as us. We need to cut them off. And this has happened in so many ways that at some point you have some people who are higher up in the movement who decide that they need to have better optics. And as this happens, they cut off the fiery element. And when this happens, when they cut off the titanistic element of the movement, they castrate themselves. And I've seen this many times. The movement simply castrate itself, and all those people, those men who showcase pride and dedication to the struggle, they were all of a sudden cut out of the picture, and all that was left in the end was a bunch of kind of chubby intellectuals who could barely keep up a flag. So yeah, it's something that, especially in recent context, I've noticed is that there seems to be this great amount of infighting, and they don't really seem to think that it's a cycle that's been going on for quite some time. This is nothing new.
Yeah, I think I've seen similar, probably what you're talking about there, Nat, as well. Once you cut off these people that were the innovation and that brought all that excitement to the movement. If you cut them off, then you really haven't got very much left. You just end up with civic nationalism. I mean, we want fanatics. We want people that live for the cause, that are prepared to die for the cause. We don't want people that are not interested in really laying things out on the line for what's going on and really giving things up. We need people that are going to be setting a really good example and believe in what they're doing and aren't going to compromise. And if you compromise, then, you know, you're going to just end up being the same as the civic nationalists. We need to have a show of strength. And one of the things I've noticed that is being repeated in the movement today is this idea that all we need to do is convince people that we are right. And this is something that Harold Covington has spoken about. We've already won that argument. We have already shown everybody that we are right. This is why they try to silence us, because they know that they cannot argue with us. So we've already proved that we are right. What we need to do now is set a good example, show people a good example so that they follow. They already know that we're right. We've won that argument. 17 million people in Britain voted for Brexit. And that just proved that everything that the nationalists have been saying for years is right and correct. And that doesn't mean that we don't need our propaganda. We do need our propaganda, but we need people that are fanatics that are going to live this in their lives. And again, partly it's helpful that I follow Christian Identity, because that's a religious side to it that says that you have to live like a nationalist in every part of your life. You cannot make compromises, you know, and you have to set a good standard and set a good example. And that's the people that we need, I would suggest.
There is something happens when the movement, the titanistic activism-based nationalist movement, decides that they want to act like parliamentarians. They realize that they want those votes. They desperately crave those votes. So they alter the message. They essentially cut off the one testicle of the movement body. They cut that off. And they try and they pamper. And it reminds me of that one incident where Nick Griffin, of the BNP at that time, was up in a interview, like not an interview, it was a debate on the BBC, where he desperately tangoed around the race question. And all of the audiences was trying to like get a concrete answer out of him. But he was like dancing around it, talking around it, didn't really want to address it. Ultimately, because he wanted to appeal to Mrs. and Mr. Johnson in Britain, the average voter, the average British voter. He tried to appeal to them. Desperately. And this has happened many times in European politics, that they've tried to appeal to the average Joe in their country. So get those votes. Unfortunately, even if we say to get to that level, and this has happened historically many times likewise with the nationalist movement from the Danish People's Party, that back in the 90s here in Denmark, where the party leader postulated proudly that you would rather die than see Denmark as a multi-ethnic state. Now, as time has gone on, those proud roars of the lion has now been altered to the whimpering of a dog. They have simply dumbed down, because ultimately, let's say that you manage to completely moderate your aesthetics, your optics. You've completely managed to like neutralize it. You appear like a average suit Joe. You know, you're wearing your suit. You have your well-formulated arguments. You don't say anything inflammatory. You don't address the obvious elephant in the room. You try and avoid using blunt words regarding it, which I can understand to a certain degree, but you have to address the elephant in the room. They avoid all that. And then when they get into parliament, the next testicle goes away. They cut off the other testicle, because then you come in to parliamentarian politics, which is nothing more but a long line of compromises. Politics is compromises. When you come in with the original intention of getting the exact number of 20. Along those lines, you go away from those 20 all the way down to maybe one, maybe a half, maybe one and a half, which you have been fighting and renting away. Essentially, parliamentarianism is next to spiritual prostitution. It is the prostitution of your own standards. And that is what happens to any party. This spiritual castration, this neutering of the political body, that happens when you try and appeal to the lowest common denominator, which is democracy. democracy is the very fundamental understanding of appealing to the lowest common denominator. It is the eternal popularity contest. Now, back in the day, democracy was completely different, since you gave only people with an investment in the future a saying in the matters. But after we got, you know, a dictatorship which could only be compared to the kind graces of the Roman masses screaming with torches in their hands and quite easily being distracted by a new circus, yes, it is truly the lowest common denominator in any democratic body that tries to, yeah, you cannot play petty case with democracy. You cannot.
I think Hitler wrote all about this, and the reason why parliamentary democracy will never work, and the compromises that you have to make, and part of democracy in itself is to get people arguing amongst one another and to divide people and to say, well, this one group is standing up for that group over there, and that this party is going to represent what this group of people or this class in society needs over there. And what we need is a nationalist party and a nationalist government. So you have one party and everything that they do is for the benefit of the ethnic nation. And then everybody is happy. And you don't get these arguments. The whole of democracy is a fraud to say that, you can have different parties fighting it out between one another. We don't need parties fighting it out between one another. We need countries competing with other countries, and we need the whole country working towards the good of that country, working towards the good of that nation. This is the difference between nationalism and parliamentary politics. It's like something completely different to parliamentary democracy, I think, because it's not about having a plurality of different opinions and different ways of doing things. It's about doing things the best way, working out the best way to do something, and then doing it, and having everybody working towards that, working towards what is the best thing to do for the country. And we don't have that with a parliamentary democracy. I mean, you just take the British one, and you have, you can have a good idea, and the Tory party could have that, but the Labour Party certainly could never say, oh, that's a good idea, we'll go along with that. They've got to oppose it. They've got to cause as much trouble as they possibly can for it. Even if they're in the wrong, they've got to do that. And the same on the side of the Tory party. And you end up with just everything being substandard and looking incompetent. And a lot of the time, you know, I used to think, how can these parties be so incompetent? But a lot of the time it's planned incompetence, because they don't want to be doing the best thing. They just want to be doing what's going to get their party elected in the next time. And if you have this parliamentary democracy, it means that the people that are in power are just going to be out of power again within 4 years. You want somebody that's in power, that's going to stay in power, that's going to be responsible, that you can hold responsible. You can say, well, things are going wrong because you did this 10 years ago. Not things are going wrong, but, oh, it was a different party that was in power back then. You can blame them, not us. It's all about shifting the blame. And we need people that are responsible, that take what they do seriously. That's the sort of politician we need. And the only way you will get that is with nationalism.
It's interesting that you're mentioning how nobody really wants to take responsibility. Adolf Hitler himself, and essentially what you are proposing, is of course the organic state. You're of course proposing the biological understanding of this world, which is the right understanding of this world. Now, Adolf Hitler himself proposed in Mein Kampf, very eloquently, if I am to say so myself, that the parliamentarian, the democratic politician, is inherently a coward who will send up test balloons to try and get broad appeal from the masses in a very safe manner, because ultimately he will never be held accountable for whatever he said or whatever he did in terms of politics. Because ultimately, when he does something, or even if he makes a mistake, he will just quietly fall into the ranks of his party and just stay quiet. Now, this is a very common thing in democratic regimes, or should I say plutocratic, because essentially in all of our Western parliamentarian systems, it is all plutocratic. These politicians are living bred politicians, and they very, very happily so enjoy this wealth they obtain as politicians. Now, I can mention here in Denmark that our politicians have taken great pride, or should I say joy, in selling away what you would call the nation's stocks. Now, we used to have something called Dong Energy here in Denmark. Dong Energy essentially, which was a company that ensured the energy flow to Denmark in terms of natural gases, gasoline, electricity, all these matters, right? It was sold to Goldman Sachs. Sold to Goldman Sachs, of all people. This guy called Bjarne Corydon, the Social Democratic Party, the Social Democratic Party, the very party that funded all of these national institutions to secure natural resources to the fatherland, he sold Dong Energy to $500 million. He sold that. After that, of course, he didn't really get anything at first, but later on he was hired by a newspaper as an editor in a newspaper in Denmark that was, funny enough, owned by Goldman Sachs. Now, this is something that happens many times in Danish politics. For example, selling away national water filtering plants to Chinese people, whereafter these people who sold those energy plants get hired by these Chinese people who bought up the stocks in the first place. It's this legalized corruption and wealth gathering within the politicians that is such a prominent reality. And normally, when you have entities in the body that act against the greater interest of the organic survival, against the body survival, when they operate in a way where they obtain resources on the behalf of the rest of the body, so it suffers, I think the definition of that is cancer.
Normally, the body removes or tries to remove alien or foreign viruses and what have you. We have antibodies that try to remove anything that's alien. But the problem is this is our own people that are doing this to us. These are traitors to ourselves. And I guess that's why the cancer allegory there fits in, because cancer is made out of your own body as well. It's your own cells that are fighting against yourself, and that's what we have here. We have traitors that are selling off the family silver, as it were, in the country. I mean, we had the same over here in Britain with British Rail. That got sold off, that got privatized. All our electric companies, they've all been privatized, and now people are people are getting £1,000, £10,000 bills sometimes for electricity that they didn't know that they'd use that much. And people, and the trains, they don't run on time. People have to pay an absolute fortune to go on them. Everything that should be owned by the government, such as water, electricity, transport, has been privatized so that other people can make profits from it. And these companies have then been sold on to foreign nations. We've got Chinese and Japanese companies owning our power companies. We've even got, I believe we've got Chinese building us a nuclear power station. It's just absolutely ridiculous. But one of the, people say that this is something that's happened since the war, and this is a problem that's happened to our democracy since the war. But I think it's right at the root of the idea of democracy in itself. I mean, when you're at school, you are taught to debate, and these politicians that learn politics, that study politics, they're taught how to debate. And the point of learning how to debate is so that you can argue a point that you don't actually believe in. Argue a point that you believe the opposite of. So it's basically teaching people how to lie, how to argue for something that is the complete opposite of what you believe in, because what you're arguing for is going to be to the benefit of the party, or because it's going to be of benefit to you through corruption, because you've been bribed. And really, we should have people being taught to do what they believe is, do what they know is right, and stand up for that, and have the courage to stand up for that, not learn how to be very, very adept liars, how to say the opposite of what they feel and lie to people. This is why these politicians all look so ugly, because the face, these false smiles that they try to put on in front of people. And of course, children, especially babies, they can see through that. This is why they cry when the politicians try to touch them, because they can see the falseness, that false smile that the politician is putting on. It's all about falsehood. It's all about falsehood and taking the wealth from the nation, putting it into the hands of a small few. And from that hands of the small few, it then goes to the foreigners, the same ones that set up the banks, that set up the usury system, the same ones that follow the Talmud, the same ones that go to the synagogue. They're the ones that are right at the top of this. They're the ones that encouraged all of this. They're the ones that got us to get rid of the monarchy and that promote democracy. And this is why. because it sucks all the wealth out of the nation and hands it over to them.
What we see is society completely drained of any sort of idealism. Idealism breeds fanaticism. Idealism breeds the striving towards greater good, wanting to make what is already there better, or expanding upon that which is good. That is a simple reality. Now, with what we see within the society, the liberal individualist society we have now, that is completely scoffed upon. The idea of wanting to improve anything for anyone else but yourself, preposterous. That is the mentality of the Westerner in our society at this very moment. But when that is being said, you see in every institution in our country, even within our state, now recently there was a major scandal, and this is something that seems to happen more and more, but it's not really registered. Still to this day, Denmark is renowned for being one of the least corrupt nations in the world. But that is according to an index that does not account for ordinary welfare corruption, where you see, essentially, directors within certain sectors of the public, you know, leaving their position to join another position, and where they get, like, the golden handshake, where they were left when they leave the job, they get a bonus of approximately 4 million kroner. Like, a constant phase of this nonsense that happens, this nepotistic, plutocratic garbage. And we are in a world where everyone serves themselves, and the state serves itself. The state is a complete separate entity at this very moment from the people, not realizing that the very purpose of the state is the people. The state is nothing more but a tool for the people's well-being. But at this very moment, the people who sit in the state are very, very self-serving. Recently, a Danish tax worker, and I talked about this back in the day on Danelaw Radio, but he accidentally gave away 2.4 billion kroners to an Englishman for no reason. Nobody really knows how it happened, but clearly it's done in the regard of not really giving two pots of piss about what he's actually doing or where he gets the money from. This alienation from the people, this atomization of the people. And that is what we see now. We are in the era where the fanatic is more needed than ever. And this talk about wanting to appeal to the lowest common denominator, to the lemming, I find the idea disgusting. And quite frankly, I find the arguments made for regulating the message. Now, I'm not saying that we should be autistic about the message and talk about, as the first thing, as a means to recruit people about the Holocaust lie. I think there's gradual levels of indoctrination into our worldview. However, these are fundamental core values in our understanding of the world. So when people say that we need to regulate our optics and put on that $20 shirt and that $10 tie to try and look sophisticated, all I have to say is, yet no. You have not thought this through, and you have clearly no idea about the way the cycle of politics seem to work.
Principles have to come first. You know, you have to stick to the ideals, and you have to be seen to be sticking to the ideals. You can't say one thing and then go and do another, which is what we see a lot of happening. And that's what happened before with a lot of the nationalist organizations in America. You have people that would be saying one thing and then doing another. And we've got the same thing now. And thankfully, we don't have any of that here at Radio Aryan. I mean, all the hosts here are exactly the same when they're not on the air as when we are on the air. And when we're making these podcasts, we're genuine people that all stick to the same ideals. White has to mean white. Only what is natural is good. Unnatural perversity is wrong. And, you know, these ideals. Go on.
Speaking of which, you know what's unnatural and not good?
Listening to
Radio Aryan. You've got to listen to Radio Aryan. That's the only natural and good thing to do.
Well, we try to keep things positive here, and we try to stick to these ideals. You know, anti-usury, that needs to be another one as well. We can't just say, well, we just want to take over the Jews system and have it for ourselves. We want to have a proper system that adheres to natural order, and we want to encourage people to be doing things for their nation, not doing things for themselves. I mean, one of the things that you brought up earlier, Nat, was this idea of voting, and people are just doing things for themselves. Well, the whole idea of voting is to do it for yourself. I mean, they teach you that when you are casting your vote, you need to be voting for the party that's going to be doing the most for you, not voting for the party that's going to be doing the most for the nation. It's all about yourself. I mean, if I was to be voting for the party that would be doing the most for me, I would probably be voting for some of these leftist parties. But that's not the way we should be thinking. We should be thinking, what is the best for the nation as a whole? You know, you can't make yourself happy. The only way that you can really be happy is through making somebody else happy. And then the fact that you've made them happy, that will make you happy. You know, people are conned into thinking that they can buy material goods and buy material possessions and trinkets and baubles, and that will make them happy. But it doesn't make them happy. You know, what makes you happy is seeing a smile on somebody else's face, and you cause that smile. That's real happiness, and that is what we are driven by. You know, we have this desire to be content, but it's become twisted. It's become subverted into thinking that buying all these material possessions and having lots of money, that will make us content. That won't make you content. What will make you content is doing the right thing and doing the right thing for your nation instead of for yourself.
And I completely agree with that sentiment. I mean, most of things man does in his life is done in the reflections and the eyes of others. Most things you do, whatever it might be, a lot of it is done merely for the purpose of trying to reflect yourself in the eyes of other people. You know, when you try and become successful, why do you want to be successful? And some people say, well, because I know then I'm good. But how do you know you're good? Because you elevate your status upon, you know, above others? Isn't that a sort of reflection? And a lot of people don't seem to understand that most things we do in our existence and is done in the mere reflection of other people's opinion about it, or reaction, or feelings.
Well, you also want to be successful because you want to fulfill your full potential. You know, you have the potential as human beings and a potential as white people, which is greater than any of these other races. And because of the system we live under, the democracy that we live under, so many of us are unable to reach our full potential. And the people that are unable to come anywhere close to that potential, Negroes and non-whites, they get all the investment under the democratic system, because everyone is treated, everybody's exactly the same. We can raise them up to our standards, and all the energy and all the resources goes into that. Women as well. Women are getting an extra 10, 15 minutes to complete their exams at Oxford because they're not capable of reaching to the same standards as men. But because of the democratic system, everything is equal. Everyone is equal, and you just end up with nobody being able to fulfill their full potential. You end up with people with a lower potential getting angry and blaming the others because they haven't, and blaming racism and blaming sexism. And the ones that really do show that potential, they're completely ignored because they're the white working class, and nobody's interested in them. In Britain, the white working class are the ones that are failing the most, and yet they've got just as much a chance of having a good IQ as those in the upper classes. Well, maybe upper classes probably got more higher IQ, but the white working class, you know, they've still got that white spirit there, which is the important thing, which is why you see whites that, you know, can't even read or write, but have running really, really successful businesses. You know, they're really good builders, or they're really good fishermen, really good carpenters, all sorts of things that they can do with their hands, but you don't really see that in the young now. You see it in the middle-aged generations that still had a bit of investment. Now we live in this multicultural society. Everyone is being failed by this system, and it's down to the roots of it. It's down to democracy. We need fascism and we need fanaticism.
I agree. Awaken, brothers. Awaken that fanatic in your soul. Take cold showers and eat cabbage.
And hopefully people will take notice of that, and they'll go out today and become a fanatic. Nat, thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Billy Roper. God bless and hail victory.